Hey, what's going on, everybody? Alan Kenny, managing editor, CrystalBallRun.com, the Blog UN Network's national college football blog. I've got one of our longtime guests coming on tonight. We're so close to the start of the season. He's going to tell us, we're going to talk a little bit about the preseason poll, the coaches poll that was released today. He's going to tell us why none of it really matters and give us his thoughts on how it is that these guys who run college football are screwing everything up. I'll bring him on in, Dave Bartu of CFBMatrix.com. Dave, what's going on, man?
Man, you know something? You're trying to get Mike Sly to leave a horse head in my bed at night. trying to screw things up. Oh, man. But you know something? There's always room for improvement. And, you know, a lot of it, you and I have been around this so much, that there is just a constant barrage of media hype that serves really to only better the media and make them look better and get them better ratings. But are all these things really better for fans and for the betterment of the game? And, you know, I question a lot of it, and I got a few different takes on the top 25 and strength of schedule and other things we might talk about tonight.
Yeah, oh yeah, believe me, I don't doubt that, Dave. But you mentioned, you know, like I said, we got the coaches poll coming out today, and you know, there was a lot of people complain about the preseason polls. I definitely get where they're coming from. How are you supposed to evaluate any of these teams without really having actually seen them on the field and whatnot? But and there's also this kind of, I think, common perception that where you start off in the polls really matters. You've got a different take on that, so I was hoping that you could kind of enlighten us and explain to us why it doesn't matter where you start.
Yeah, and before I start that, though, I used to be that guy that said we should start the polls in October. We should see how this plays out. And because I really firmly believed that the polls were objective on the talent of the team, its schedule, and all these different components that could be considered in the top 25, but it's not real. You know, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter when the top 25 or any rankings, top 10, top 50, who cares what it is, okay? In the last 10 years, and you can go to my website and see the work that I've done on this, it is almost a perfect line from ranking 1 through 25. At the end of the season, it is exactly by wins and losses. The more wins, the fewer losses, the higher you're ranked. So, you know, if we're talking about Oklahoma, if it's June, if it's March, if it's November, if they start out number 1 or number 50, if at the end of the year they're 12-0 and nobody else is, guess what? They're number 1. If they're 11-1, they are only going to be ranked behind SEC and Pac-12 teams historically. That's the way it works. 10-2, 9-3, if they're 8-4, they're not even in the top 25. And it doesn't matter when this starts. You play 12 games, you win X amount, you lose X amount, you're ranked according to your win total and your conference affiliation. There's a couple of variances over the last decade in there, but that is almost perfectly by the numbers. So, you know, coaches poll, AP, computer programmers, it doesn't matter when it starts. It's all going to turn out the same in the end. Win your football games.
Yeah, I mean, that's always kind of been my rationale. You know, once you kind of lose, you leave yourself in the hands of the system. But yeah, that's kind of an interesting point, though, about so the SEC gets first crack. They'll be the one, if you have teams of similar record that, mm-hmm. you know, typically are going to be ranked ahead of the other teams. Then the Pac-12 and then the Big 12. Is that that's the kind of pecking order?
Yeah, that's your top three right there. Now, I'm sure there's some of you that are listening that will go through and check every single final BCS ranking for the last decade, and you're going to find some abnormalities in that. That's just a basic kind of matrix view on things in its simplicity. It's not always going to be perfect, but if you give me an 11-1 SEC team, an 11-1 Pac-12 team, an 11-1 Big 12 team, at the end of the season, I would rank them in that order, and virtually every time, I'm going to be right.
Wow. Okay. And so I guess my other question, so stuff like, you know, you hear stuff like, oh, well, when you lose matters, you know, it's better to lose early than late, or, you know, it's better to play a stronger strength of schedule or something like that. You really don't think any of that matters?
No, I don't.
I mean, in the aggregate.
It may matter for a couple of ranking points, you know, 6 versus 8, 3 versus 4. You know, it could potentially matter in something like that. But overall, if you're 10-2 and you lose at the end of the season, you're going to be in there with all the other 9-3 schools. You know, you may be 17 instead of 15, but, you know, I guess it depends on your perspective as a fan. If you're a Sooner fan, the way you recruit, the conference you're in, with the new playoff system, if you're not in the playoffs, who cares where you're ranked? Who cares what bowl you go to? Because your history, your tradition, your recruiting, your desire for success, what you're looking for every single season is to get into that 4-team playoff going forward. You know, and if it's not, who cares if you're ranked 11th? Who cares if you're ranked 19th? Who cares if you're not even in the top 25? Your recruiting is fundamentally never going to change over a 4-year period, no matter how you're ranked. And if you want some proof of that, ask a 5-7 Texas team that pulled a number 3 class, and ask a Boise State team that has won a million games in the last 10 years that can't get out of the, you know, inside the top 50 of recruiting. So it just comes down to your perception. And to me, as from a Sooner standpoint, you're looking at being in that top 4. If you're a 10-win team, a 9-win team, you're in the top 25 somewhere, and you're likely to be ranked above the ACC, the Big Ten, the Big East, and all the non-AQs that have a similar record.
Yeah, wow. So that's you know, that's it's very fatalistic, isn't it? I guess kind of funny to think about.
Yeah,
like
I mean, I hate to, you know, it's everybody wants to think it's this big, complex, emotional thing, but the bottom line is the voters, the computer programmers, no matter who it is, they have to answer and explain it to the public. And if the public doesn't understand it, or they don't think the public's going to understand their vote, they're very not likely, as a majority, to vote that way. That's why you're not seeing a 10-2 team in the top 3. That's why a 9-3 isn't in the top 10. That's why an 11-1 Louisville, let's say this year, isn't in, you know, ranked 20 through 25 because of who they're playing. So if the public doesn't understand it, they understand wins, they understand losses, they have a perception of conference power and strength. That's how it's been. And it's not just the last 10 years. If you go back 20 years ago to the old AP before the BCS even existed, same exact thing. The only difference between the new BCS and the old AP was that the computers favor the non-AQs more consistently, almost verbatim, every year, 4 non-AQs in the top 25, yet nobody from the Big 12, the Pac-12, the Big 10, the ACC, hardly anybody that is 8-4 cracks the top 25. But teams like Toledo and Houston, who play absolutely nobody, win 10, 11, 12 games, boom, let's put them in there because of their win total.
Interesting stuff. Well, let's, again, we don't have any records to go on, but let's talk real quick about this poll here. I don't know how you're supposed to rank the. One of the things that I hate is you don't really get much guidance in terms of how you're supposed to rank these teams in the preseason. You know, I went through today, actually. Hold on, I've got my. You know what? I was at the gym and I had my phone. Let's see here. So I tried to sketch out some power ratings. And for example, you know, you've got Ohio State here at number 2. Now, I can see if you're projecting Ohio State, that's where they'll finish at the end of the year. But, you know, I mean, in terms of a power rating, if I'm going, you know, on pure strength of schedule pure team strength, and when they're meeting on a neutral field, I think I've got Ohio State somewhere around closer to 10. You know, I mean, 9 or 10. I mean, it's just so odd the way they do this.
Well, it is, but again, it is, I think people are voting based on their perception of where this team is going to be. If you look at Ohio State's schedule, the only team that is going to prevent them from going 12-0 is Ohio State. That's it. You know, so if you're trying to look good and look right based on the system, then you're going to rank Ohio State at least number two, because they have really, they have the best odds of going 12-0 and getting to a national title game. Because the difference between their ability and talent versus the rest of their conference is a bigger gap than anybody else in the country.
Yeah, that's kind of the way I guess I'm reading it. Let me go give you the top 10. Tell me if there's anybody in here that you think is cruising for a bruising, so to speak, this year that's going to end up being pretty overrated. Number one, we got Alabama, two, Ohio State, three, Oregon, four, Stanford, five, Georgia, six, Texas A&M, seven, South Carolina, eight, Clemson, nine, Louisville, 10, Florida. Anybody in there? I mean, we can certainly make the argument about Louisville really being a product of the competition that they'll end up facing. But are any of those teams that you feel like really kind of out of place?
Well, yeah, I mean, you're right on Louisville, because, you know, the everybody else that you just named is a top 20 recruiter. Louisville is not even barely a top 30 recruiter. It's a product of their schedule. And this gets back to the strength of schedule matter, which we might get into later. And if we do, Louisville's a great example. You're trying to tell me the strength of schedule matters when they play no one. Now, getting back to your question, though, who could be you don't want to say a fraud, because these are all very talented teams.
Yeah.
Okay? But the three that pop out the most to me is, in no particular order, but I'll go in order of how you read them, Oregon, okay? New coach.
Yeah.
Are they talented? Yes. Do they have a great schedule? Yes. Is everybody buying into that things are going to be exactly the same without Chip Kelly? Why? I have no idea. In the last 7 years, there have been 13 teams that have had a new head coach change after coming off a season of 9-3 or better, which Oregon is coming off 11-1. 13 times. Of those 13 times, nine out of 13, the team had a worse, not equal, worse record the next year. So for me to be convinced that Oregon is going to go 12-0 or 11-1 based on those stats, I can't do it.
Yeah.
So now 10-2 is still going to be top 15. They're still going to be a very, very good program. They're going to still have a great year, and I'm a Duck. I'm a season ticket holder. I'm paying for this stuff. But the numbers say don't bet on them being successful. Okay. Now, you also have Texas A&M. They play 12 games this year. Only 9 of them have they out-recruited their competition. When you adjust for home and away, it's only 8. Now, they're going to go 11-1 to be in the top 5, they're actually going to have to be better this year than last year. And I don't see that happening. The numbers always say coaches can't be that great, except Snyder. I hate that guy. except him, but they got to regress a little bit. They're the number 6 recruiter in the SEC. To expect them to compete at that level, to potentially win a division, to win the conference, they're not good enough yet. They are closer to Ole Miss than LSU and Alabama. And the last one there, and I think it's the biggest one, South Carolina. Now, keep this in mind. In the last 8 years, 88% of all conference and division winners in AQ football are top 3 recruiters over the last 4 years. South Carolina, in their own division, isn't even a top 3 recruiter. Tennessee, Georgia, and Florida have all out-recruited South Carolina in the last 4 years. I think South Carolina has the biggest potential to take the biggest fall out of that top 10, not win their division, and really come short of what everybody expects. But I think everybody is banking on Steve Spurrier and one big monster hit they saw in a bowl game.
Yeah.
And I think it's too much, and they have too little to be competitive going forward. And I'll even call a big shot on South Carolina at Knoxville. Vols win.
Whoa, okay. Whoa, all right. Bringing the heat already here, Dave. I like it. I like it, man.
Hey, you know, the Matrix is about nothing gray.
Yeah.
Black or white, and bring it. Right or wrong, have no fear.
All right. I like that, man. I like that a lot. So you were talking about strength of schedule. This is one of those things that it seems like it's so hard to quantify. I don't know. nobody has, I feel like, come up with a satisfactory way to really factor this into how we rank these teams, how this all shakes out. I mean, what are your thoughts there?
Well, you know why it's hard to quantify? Because you can't quantify it. You have 126 FBS schools. They play 3 to 4 out-of-conference games. When you look at those ratios, it is impossible to come up with a valid strength of schedule mathematically. And I'm talking advanced, freak you out, complete no understanding of how they got their math. And that's the other problem, because even if somebody had a way to come up with some super hybrid crazy formula for strength of schedule, you, me, and everybody else, we wouldn't understand it. Joe Public wouldn't get it. A committee. I mean, these ADs have a hard time hiring a good coach. How are they going to understand strength of schedule? And so when you really look at it, is, you know, some if somebody comes up and says, hey, I have a great strength of schedule, well, it's a strength of schedule that you think meets what you feel is a good football program. It's all biased. Strength of schedule is meaningless in this process because the public won't understand it. It's not valid. And quite honestly, I'll go full Mel Gibson here. It's a conspiracy theory. You know, because who benefits the most from great out-of-conference games? Fans that don't care, that want to watch good football and big TV. That's it. But, you know, does Oklahoma benefit from playing 2 tough out-of-conference games, including their 9-game conference schedule? You know, nobody's going to say, like, this year, Clemson's a great example, okay? Out of conference. They play Georgia and South Carolina, okay? Now, if they go 10-2 or 9-3, do you think a committee could come out of their meeting and tell Joe Public, tell you and me, hey, you know, Clemson won the ACC. They played a great schedule. There were 14 teams that had a better record than them, but they were really close to Georgia and South Carolina, so we're going to put them in a playoff. It's never going to happen. It's false. You know something? Win all 12 of your football games. When it's up to humans, humans do one thing. They gravitate towards what they understand. That's wins and losses and their perception on the strength of the conference. If you're Louisville, if you're Clemson, if you're Oklahoma, just win all your football games and see how the cards fall. If you schedule very, very tough out-of-conference games, including your brutal conference schedule, all you're doing is increasing your odds of losing, and when you increase your odds of losing, you are decreasing your odds of the playoffs, and if you don't get in the playoffs, you can't win a national title, and in Norman, you just want to get into a playoff.
See, but the thing is the fan in me, though, man, I really do love those big games. I mean, I do love the fact that Oklahoma's schedule's tough. I mean, historically, they've been one of the, you know, major powers that generally schedules pretty aggressively, you know. I completely understand what you're saying. I agree. It doesn't help them at all in the national title race, so to speak. But I do love those games, though, man. I mean, like, you know, Notre Dame, Florida State. I mean, games like that, man. I'll take that over a body bag any day, man.
Oh, I'm not disagreeing with you there. It's going to be all up to what the fans want. But when it comes down to ranking teams and deciding who does or doesn't get into a playoff, I think strength of schedule, this whole notion, this buzzword, that's all it is. It's a buzzword. It's not going to, except in a very, very rare circumstance, they're not going to be able to point to a strength of schedule as a way to differentiate it. Just win all your football games. Now, if you want to schedule tough, if you want to schedule the Florida State, you know, if you a home and home with Florida State, that was awesome. I mean, you can't deny it. It's exciting. I mean, like this year, finally Oregon has a decent flipping home game with Tennessee. And we all know what happened with the last good home game that was an out-of-conference game.
Don't even get me started, man.
Oh, man, if I knew you back then, I'd still be texting you about it.
Yeah.
So you can't deny how much fun that is. But on the flip side, if your goal is getting into that playoff and getting into the national title, if you're simply scheduling because you believe that's going to get you in there, win or lose, you're wrong. I believe you're wrong. If you're doing it because you want to do that, if you want to do that for the fans, if you believe that to be the best, you have to play the best, that's fine. But the consequence of it is a greater risk of loss and a greater risk of not getting in the playoffs. You can't have it both ways.
All right. I want to transition, you know, we're kind of getting up against it here, but I want to transition to a topic that I know is near and dear to your heart. We've got a lot of disagreement about the Texas Longhorns this year. Phil Steele has them ranked number 4 overall in the country. The media in the Big 12 has Texas picked 4th in the Big 12. And the coaches poll has Texas 15. So who's right about the Longhorns?
Well, at 15, they're basically saying that they're predicting Texas to be 9-3 or 10-2, which is right along with what Mac's been doing in the last 4 years. He is a -3 game coach, which means he's losing 3 games he shouldn't be losing based on his talent. Well, he's got the best talent in the conference. He's got the best talent in all 12 games they're playing. So 12 minus 3, 9-3. He's basically, everybody's saying he's a 9.5 win team. But Steele, you know, he bases a lot of his information and his predictions on returning starters. Well, from an elite standpoint, we know that that really doesn't mean anything. USC had 19 guys back last year. That worked out great.
Yeah.
You know, and as long as Mack Brown is there and the coaching staff has the turnover that has been going on, there's no really limited stability there, you can't bet on these guys. And if anybody says, well, it's not Mack Brown, okay, how would you feel if Gary Patterson was in charge this year? You'd be scared to death. You would expect them, just like Alabama, to smoke everyone, which means it's not a talent issue. It's not a schedule issue. It is a coach issue. And I, looking at the numbers, the very, very basic numbers that I have, it's been a coaching issue for a long time. Texas has great attrition numbers. They don't lose guys. They have great recruiting numbers. Dude, you and I can put on the burnt orange, offer 4-star guys, 5-star guys. They will still find it. It doesn't matter. It is an amazing powerhouse. It's an amazing tradition. And for the last 4 years, it has been lost. And as long as he is there, and this turnover keeps happening in the coaching department, and the inability to improve these guys is consistent, they're constantly going to be not improving, not living up to expectations, and not expected to win the conference. You know, once they get a top coach in there, God, look out. You know, they could do an Alabama run, and if you don't think so, how would you feel about Nick Saban being at Texas the last 4 years? It would be scary.
Let's talk real quick then, kind of wrapping up here. Let's talk futures. You know, I want to talk a few over-under bets here with you. I've got my favorite play, and that is Vanderbilt under 7.5. Any thoughts there?
Ooh, I like that. Yeah, I do like that. Reason being, okay, Franklin has been that guy pisses me off too. He has way overperformed his talent. Awesome coach the last 2 years. But the research I did in the off season on NFL quarterback success points to coach effect not really being all that. It's not all coaching effect, again, except that guy in Manhattan. It is and can be contributed to a very, very good quarterback. And it's no coincidence, in my opinion, that Rodgers was Franklin's quarterback the last 2 years. He's gone. That guy led them to football games. I actually, believe it or not, I know I don't hardly watch any college football, but I watched a few Vanderbilt games, and that guy was awesome. He led them to wins. He's not there anymore. So I think they're due for a big regression, maybe not huge, but big enough where it'll shock some people. They're a bottom four recruiter in the SEC. That means, you know, 8-9 wins is very, very difficult. I do like the under on that. If you said, hey, Dave, you got $100, over or under, I totally agree with you. The only thing that makes me hesitate is Franklin's record the last 2 years. It's just been that good. I'd be kind of scared to go all in on Franklin, but I do like the under on that one.
All right, give us one that you think looks pretty good out there.
Oh, well, everybody listening, you know what you want me to say. But you know something? I 100% would back betting on the Sooners over 8.5. I looked at the line when I did the numbers back in March and April, and I saw the Vegas lines come out. I actually literally did a double take when I saw 8.5 for the Sooners. And let me tell you why. Okay, they have out-recruited 11 of the 12 teams they're playing this year. Only Texas. The only team they haven't out-recruited has the second-worst game coach in the entire country. The only game they're projected to lose potentially on the road is going to be at Notre Dame. Bob Stoops, in the last 5 years, I have never been off more than one game, plus or minus one game, on his final win total in the last 5 years. And I'm saying they're going to win 10 this year. Vegas line's giving me 8.5. That is a green light to absolutely go after the Sooners and take the over on that one this year.
Ooh, now if it was at 9.5, would you still go over?
No.
Okay.
I'm adverse risk. I like being aggressive in the picks, but when it comes down to playing these things, I think the second best thing that you can do is pass and not lose. Obviously, losing is the worst thing. So you know, when it comes too close, I just don't think you ought to go for something like that. 8.5 to me is an absolute green light to take Oklahoma. To me, if they go 8-4, I would be absolutely shocked. I think there would have to be catastrophic injury. There'd have to be a culture issue. There'd have to be a lack of focus. There'd have to be a coaching problem. I'm not seeing that right now. The stability is there. The lack of attrition is there. The recruiting is there. This is the second-best recruiter in the conference. Second-best recruiters in the conference with good coaching and good attrition do not go 8-4. I take the over on the Sooners all day long, twice on Sundays after church.
Dave, you convinced me. All right, let's do it. All right, I'm with you, man. I'm with you. All right, okay, man. Well, hey, you know, Dave, let everybody know, you know, what's going on there with the CFB Matrix and, you know, where they can find you and, you know, hit you up with some other thoughts on what's going to be going down this college football season.
Well, you know, Sam, it's been absolutely fun so far. It is blowing up like I've never seen it before. Obviously, you can follow at CFB Matrix. Anything you want to find on the website, Google College Football Matrix in any order. It's the whole first page. And actually new this year is go to iTunes, look up Bartoo, and right now we're in the top 50 of free podcasts in iTunes. I'm going to be everything I do. Teams and articles is going to be 100% narrated through what I'm seeing in the Matrix. Read along or as you're driving. Every show that I do is going to be there for everybody all year.
Yeah, it's great stuff. That's been such a nice addition to the site and everything, man. I definitely checked that out on some of the long drives home or, you know, when I got a long commute. So that I've definitely enjoyed that addition. So anyway, man, well, you know, I won't take up any more of your time. I really do appreciate, though, you coming on with us, Dave. It's always a pleasure having you on, man. So really appreciate it.
Oh, it is great, and I can only hope one day Oregon plays the Sooners again and they win on a bad fumble call.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah. Somehow, hopefully karmically, that'll even out. I've never, man. Ah. Anyway. All right. Thanks again to our guest, Dave Bartu. Check him out, cfbmatrix.com and at cfbmatrix on Twitter. Thank you all for joining us. I'm Alan Kenny. Take it easy.